Campsite Media.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Infamous This Week. I'm Vanessa Grigoriadis.
And I'm Natalie Roberman.
We are going to do a little bit of a follow-up to last week because it's spring, and that's usually when college acceptances go out. So you may have people in your life that are talking about this right now. With Varsity Blues, it's pretty clear that that was a major scandal. But in reporting that story, we realized that the real scandal is what's going on now.
Yeah, the current real scandal is how the elite are getting into college now, whether that's by paying for lots of test prep, subject tutoring, coaching, and essay help.
So there was just a huge story in New York Magazine. What was it talking about?
Yeah, the headline was Inventing the Perfect College Applicant. For $120,000 a year, Christopher Rim promises to turn any student into Ivy bait.
Oh my God, that is crazy. What?
So basically, it's all about this really, really expensive college consultant who will work with these elite kids who have rich parents and basically try and guarantee them getting into an Ivy League school.
Yeah, he's like texting students 15 minutes before their math class to make sure they're turning in homework. I mean, that is insane.
So I had absolutely none of that when I was applying to college. And I actually just found my incredibly embarrassing college essay.
Oh my God, please read us a few lines from it. I'm dying to hear what this sounds like.
Well, I warn you that it's incredibly pretentious and should never see the light of day, especially not on a podcast. But look, here we go. I'm going to embarrass myself for everybody's entertainment. Here's the first line. To convey a sense of who I am in true empirical style, I ought to describe the experiences I have had and explain how they have made me the person writing this today.
Oh, no.
Are you ready for this?
Yes.
I should elaborate on my hardworking ethos by creating pathos through presenting the difficult circumstances I've overcome to succeed.
Whoa.
However, just that I began this essay with a philosophical pun already suggests I probably do not intend to write about what you might expect to read about the life I have led. Instead, what I want you to know about me is simply that I have had a life.
Oh my God. Okay, I mean, this is like comp lit major bait. They're like, send this person to study postmodernism with our best literature professors.
And that's what I majored in.
I feel for all the 17-year-olds out there who are composing these kinds of essays and fervently crossing their fingers and being like, oh my God, please let me get in. But then they go to college and they come out with so much debt because the cost of college just keeps rising and rising and rising, and the student loan borrowing is just going up and up and up at the same time. You start just being like, what is this all for? What is this for?
Right. Is it even worth it? Student debt now totals like $1.77 trillion, which is just like an unfathomable amount of money. And yet people are trying harder and harder to get into college. So you actually talk to somebody who coaches kids to write their college essays, like my awful essay.
Yeah, so she's a playwright, and she also has a job coaching kids on college essays. Her name is Sarah Bernstein, and she's really on the front lines of what it is that colleges want from students and how this whole very strange system is playing out today.
So she wrote this New York Times opinion piece that was titled Elite College Admissions Have Turned Students into Brands. She describes in her essay, and what you guys talk about is this idea that colleges now want students who are quote unquote pointy, which means that they sort of need to be specialists in one thing rather than generalists, which I looked back at my college essay and it's fully about how I'm a generalist and do all these different things.
I think what Sarah's talking about is a lot of parents who are pushing their kids to try to figure out what they want to do in life at 18 just for the college application so you can get in. Which is what's so silly about this whole situation is then you go to college and people, not everybody, but a lot of people party, and it just seems so incredibly upside down to me and like one of the parts of American culture and economy that is really just ripe for disruption.
All right, over to you and Sarah.
How far are you from college?
It's been 20 years since I applied to college.
Okay, so a while. It has been a while. Yes.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And where did you go to school?
I went to Brown.
I'm sure you took the application process seriously.
Sure, though I think in a different scale from what's expected today. I mean, I remember being told growing up that, like, junior year, you've got to really buckle down. That's when everything really starts to count. And now it's that seems so quaint that you would have all of that time, you know, to just, like, be a kid.
It's true. I mean, so my college essay was about how my father had taken me out on his small sailboat and he didn't make me wear a life jacket. So I decided not to wear a life jacket. And then we ended up capsizing because it became a very stormy day. And I realized I should be wearing my life jacket. I mean, it's incredible to me that that was the most serious thing that had happened to me in my life by then. But
I'm already seeing what the insight is there. I think that's a fascinating thing to write about. I also don't think you have to write your college essay about the worst thing that's ever happened to you, which is definitely a pressure that kids feel.
Sure.
But that's not my perspective.
Right. I mean, it just feels piquant given that so much happens in life between college essay writing and middle age, so many different kinds of insights. But for somebody who is just reading the news and not going through the college application process with their kids, it's hard to know, is there really that much more pressure, or is this a helicopter parent kind of fantasy? Is it really more competitive, or was it always competitive? So what do you see?
In terms of just the objective measures, acceptance rates have been going down for some time. It is objectively more competitive. But I think a consequence of that is this sort of panic that takes hold among parents and students, and that's very contagious. You know, I'm seeing not only the process of college applications become more stressful, but also that stress is seeping into kids' lives earlier and earlier. It's always sort of a domino effect, I think. If one parent and one family is doing everything they can to get their kid into college, it's very easy to see how that panic takes hold and everybody feels like, well, this is what's expected at this point.
But isn't that so silly? I mean, we're adults.
I think there is this expectation that you're supposed to give your kids the best of everything. And for a particular set of parents, I think the best includes giving them the opportunity to go to the small handful of schools that are by no means the only way to get a great education in this country. But I think this is a thing that sort of supercharges the inequality that already exists within college admissions, within our education system. But it's a hard sell to a parent to say, well, not all kids can get these advantages, so you shouldn't give them to your kid, particularly because I think these parents are operating in a bubble in which every other parent that they're seeing is giving their kid these advantages. I think this is related, this sort of era of personal optimization.
Right.
That we're in. This idea that we're all supposed to be our best and the healthiest and most productive and most beautiful and richest we could possibly be. And as a parent, now it becomes like, well, how do you give your child the opportunity to be that? And is that part of being a good parent?
Right. And what's so fascinating about the essay you wrote is the idea that you're supposed to figure that out before college. The part of applying to college is as a branded product. Each child needs to know who they are, and you bring that to the overall graduating class of this Ivy League school includes all these pointy kids. Can you describe what that is, pointy and branded? It's so bizarre for somebody who didn't know about it.
You know, when I was applying to school, the idea was you were supposed to be well-rounded, which meant maybe you played a sport and you did some community service and you also got good grades, which was a tall enough order. Mm-hmm. But now the idea of being a pointy applicant means that you're really excelling and you're really committing to one specific area. And that probably means that you're starting whatever that extracurricular is really early so that you can move as far and as fast in it as possible. And it's connected to this idea of branding, because a lot of what these college consultants and college prep companies are advocating is figure out, like, what makes you stand out. Is it about you're this athlete and mentor? Are you this brainy chess champion who's also really concerned about green energy, which from an intuitive perspective makes sense if you're thinking about if there's this huge stack of applications, if yours has this really clear through line, if they remember you as this is the student who has been doing Irish step dancing since they were 4 years old, that's going to keep you from blending into the application.
I mean, it seems so gimmicky. My daughter likes art and my son likes playing with cars. The
right.
things that most kids are into are just quotidian, banal. We're just living life and here's some things you happen to be interested in.
Totally.
And of course, then it is incumbent on the parents to quote unquote expose them by a trip to Laos and Cambodia, where they'll learn about the ancient art of some particular kind of woodworking that only happens right. in Southeast Asia, and they'll become obsessed with it, right?
I think it certainly happens. It's not like these kids don't exist who just independently gravitate towards an obscure, pointy passion. But I think you're right that most of the time, the way that you end up with some kind of rarefied interest is that you're exposed to it through your family connections and resources, either because your parents know that this is going to be something that's really useful for college admissions, or just because they have the means to give you this kind of exposure. And that's another way in which this ends up being something that really exacerbates existing inequality.
This is Infamous from Campside Media.
So we're back with Sarah Bernstein talking about the Rich and Famous's experience of trying to get their kids into top-tier colleges. An elite college is still thought of as the best way to get ahead in America. I mean, if you want to be making one of those crazy CEO salaries, like $10 billion a year or whatever, you definitely have to go to college. But at the same time, famous college dropouts include Bill Gates, Mark Zuckerberg, Oprah Winfrey, Kanye West. Kanye dropped out of Chicago State, as many who know his album College Dropout are aware. I believe deeply in education, obviously, and the idea that education can turn mirrors into windows, as someone once said. The more you know in life, the less inward you are, the more you can see. And that is all so important. But the way that colleges have developed also seems so perverse to me, with 2- and 4-year state schools also breaking the bank, saddling graduates with debt at a time when inflation is so high. Plus, traditional majors like history or philosophy make it pretty hard to get a job now when you get out of college. And with so many high schoolers heading to colleges today, around 65% in America, counting all the 2- and 4-year colleges, there's sort of credential inflation going on. Like, what is the point of a degree when everyone has one? Combine all of this with how, at the very tippy top of the scale, there's so much gaming the system to get a kid into college with the perfect college essay, and it all just starts to feel sort of unjust. So how did you start working with students on college essays?
I actually started working with students on college essays through a nonprofit I was working with, Writopia. And so I'd been teaching these writing workshops, and they asked if I was interested in working with students on college essays. And I was surprised by how much I enjoyed it. I know when I tell people it's like one of my favorite kinds of teaching, they're surprised sometimes because it can seem so rigid and so high stakes, but also, it's just exciting to be a part of a process that is so concentrated in both the timeline and the impact. Kids come into it feeling totally daunted. They've gotten these stories for years about these admissions officers who are looking at thousands of applicants. They're only going to look at your application for 12 minutes or 8 minutes. And you're like, well, how can I possibly imagine that I've ever had a story or a thought that's interesting enough to impress that person? So then to be able to work with a student and talk them through where they're able to realize, oh, I do have something to say. Things have happened to me and I have learned from them and I have a voice. To see that kind of relief generated in such a short period of time is really thrilling.
So how long are each of these essays and what's the prompt?
I mean, the personal statement itself is 650 words. They're compact. And then often there's like supplemental essays that kids are writing that are like 300 words.
That's like three paragraphs.
Yeah. And then so the exercise just becomes, how do you take all of this and condense it down? Students are used to, how do we drag this out into like a 10-page paper? A lot of them do not have experience with, how do I say something really profound in 250 words?
Right. Should I write a haiku? Like,
exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's a real puzzle that way. But the Common App prompts, you know, something that comes up again and again is this idea that a lot of them are looking for self-reflection. What's an experience that you've had with failure? If something didn't go your way, what did you learn from it? What's a time when you've changed your mind? What they want to know is, how do you take in the world and process it? And I think looking at that can take a little bit of the pressure off from this idea of, well, do I have something interesting enough to write about? Because from my perspective, it's really about the depth and the quality of the insight more than the novelty of the experience.
Sure. And that's so interesting. How do you allow the world to change you? How does that experience of capsizing with your father, what do you take away from it? Are you a sociopath who's, so I just learned it's dog-eat-dog out there. Like, what did you learn? But what did you write about in your college essay?
I actually wrote an essay in which part of it was poetry, and it was just generally sort of about loss. It would have been a particularly difficult year in which I had a couple of family members had passed, and so I was writing about that more generally. But I don't think I had the perspective of, like, okay, well, what's the worst thing that's ever happened to me? This is what I'll go for. It came out fairly organically. This is like what I was thinking about at the time. But I feel grateful that I didn't know enough to recognize how risky it was to experiment with form in that way, because I sort of, I think I just went for it. But now I think I would have been a little bit more intimidated. If I had understood the stakes in the way that I think that students do today, I never would have gone out on such a limb. But that said, if any of my students came in and they're like, this is my college essay and it's three poems, I would be psyched about it. You know, taking risks, I think, often does pay off.
Right. So not only just coloring in the lines of this branded persona. I mean, do you think that students get anything good out of thinking of themselves that way, as an optimized brand?
I mean, I think reflecting on your values, your achievements and qualities, and then it's also your values. That's what a lot of people talk about in these like personal branding seminars or lesson plans. So to reflect on what's important to you, I think is always a useful exercise. My concern is more about if you feel as though you have to flatten yourself almost into this platform. I mean, the age of social media, we all feel like these public figures in a way, or almost like politicians, like you have to have your platform and you're like, this is what I'm all about. But I think the idea that you have to sort of make that kind of declaration and then live up to it, as opposed to coming to it more organically, I think that can be really challenging and potentially limiting for kids, because, you know, you're just figuring that stuff out.
Yeah, you say many college consultants suggest beginning to align your activities with your college ambitions by ninth grade. And the National Institute of Certified College Planners recommends students talk with parents, guardians, and academic advisors to create this clear plan in junior high school, which is, as you write, the idea of a group of middle schoolers soberly mapping out their careers is both comical and depressing.
Yeah, totally. There was another line I actually wanted to include in there, that after they make this recommendation that you have this conversation in junior high, they also add, consider all options before making a decision. So they're like, don't, you know, all these options. Seventh graders, don't do anything rash or anything.
Right. You know, like, environmentally conscious musician is one choice. What are the other choices that you see people making?
You know, the idea of being pointy can apply to several different approaches. So it might be that you have this specific issue or aspect of a certain field that you've been really interested in and you've been pursuing. You're the kid who was part of a team that discovered a cure for this rare disease. But alternately, looking at what you're interested in and drilling down so that most of your extracurriculars and what you're writing about in your college application and the courses you're taking at school all fall into a couple of buckets, that you're not spreading yourself too thin so that, you know, you're harder to remember because then you have all this overlap with everybody else's application. I think the idea is that that makes you more memorable.
Exactly. If you write three poems for your essay, you will be more memorable.
That's without true. Question.
You were ahead of the curve on that.
This is Infamous from Campside Media.
Man, I love college. Hey! I love drinking.
Hey! That was Asher Roth and his 2009 song, I Love College. It's a college anthem that's not really satire. But I think we all know at this point that college is a lot more than drinking. Some kids are working multiple jobs. They're taking STEM classes. They're doing everything they can to make this time pay off. But getting to college is still a difficult journey for a lot of kids. And that's why some of their parents are breaking the bank to hire college consultants. So we're going to go back to Sarah Bernstein and also talk about my stint teaching at NYU, the university in downtown New York City, where Mary Kate and Ashley Olsen went. It was featured on Girls, the TV show. It's just a new behemoth in the very expensive private university landscape. Some of this advice comes from these college consultants who New York Magazine recently covered are charging tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars. Do you think those consultants are helpful and useful? Are they getting kids into school?
I think it probably depends because some kids are already driven and they're focused and they also want this very badly for themselves. And so having this superstructure, I think, is useful. And then if you're a kid that just isn't in that place when you're 15, 16 years old, I think the pressure can be really detrimental. I mean, some of these the companies, you know, I think particularly the one that was mentioned in that New York Magazine cover story, they also start working with students as early as possible. So they have somebody who is not only sort of mapping out the best possible path for you starting in eighth grade, but they also talked about how they have people who are following up to make sure you go to your basketball practice and you are studying for your history exam.
Yeah, they're like the mafia. They're like, are you doing everything for your future that you could be? Otherwise, we break your legs. It's crazy.
It's like the outsourcing of helicopter parenting. Even if you've got a super elite team that's trying to make sure everything is working out for them, there's also the question of, like, where does that leave all these kids when they show up freshman year at college? If they've basically had this sort of pit crew that's swooping in every time, it's hard to imagine that they could ever feel fully equipped for that shift into independence.
Totally. But it's just an out of control market, really, when you look at it, like, that's affecting people's family lives, their kids' psychological lives, their own psychological lives. When you look at the idea that college consulting is a $2.9 billion a year business. I mean, all the ads on every single podcast I recently read are about half that per year. And everybody knows they listen to a lot of podcast ads. So that is just an extraordinary amount of money and also pressure and also unfairness. And that's the thing I think we have to talk about. The idea that college at Vanderbilt now with room and board and the extras is almost $100,000 a year. And what are we doing here when you can watch a lot of college quality classes on YouTube? Maybe you have to go to something that's slightly more subscription based, but it's never been easier to educate yourself. Right.
Yeah. That just as information is getting further democratized, but these elite institutions are closing in. further right. and further. It's really kind of crazy.
Right. And this idea that the more it's like a expensive, you know, if you go to a expensive exercise class, one of these cycling classes, if the cycling class is $25, you might take it more seriously than if the cycling class is $13. And then there's places like SoulCycle where I think they're like, give us $50. You know, like, wait a second. The sad thing to me is I taught a journalism class a few years ago at a very fancy private school. And I taught about 20 students who were graduate students who were each paying $65,000 a year to be there. These kids would take three or four classes a semester. They paid me for the entire class $8,000. So I was like, well, where is the rest of the money?
As an adjunct before. It's crazy.
So to be an adjunct is basically, if you have a full adjunct schedule, you are probably making between $20,000 and $30,000 a year.
Yeah, math is really mind-blowing.
It's unbelievable. And so I think people are questioning, what is college for? It just strikes me that college is now very much for the parents and their feeling of self-worth. Now, that's not to say that I didn't have a great time in college and we can sit here and say, oh, you can educate yourself. But how many people really do that? But at the same time, when you look at the economy going to either extremely specialized STEM-related jobs, no jobs for the humanities whatsoever, and then if you want to be creative, you're really going to be in a sort of content creator underclass, creative underclass mold. At $400,000 a year, carrying some of that as loans, why would you do that to yourself?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's becoming harder and harder to justify what the value is of that traditional four-year college experience as these costs are ballooning further and further. Part of the reason that I wanted to write this essay, I mean, you asked earlier, are these admissions consultants providing something that's useful? Are they actually helping kids get into college? And I think potentially they are. But if we don't look at what is actually at stake in buying into all of this craziness and putting your kids in this particular rat race, then you're not able to evaluate fully, if this is what we're risking, what are we gaining? What are these students actually getting ultimately by getting into this particular school or that particular school? I think that's the kind of reflection that is useful on both the individual and the societal level. Right. If your parents can get you your dream internship when you're 15 years old, like, why do you have to go to Yale? But if there's something, it's about what the parents think they should be doing or how it makes them feel about themselves. If it's purely something about status or class affirmation, is that worth the potential costs to everybody? Right.
Can you just explain what's going on with testing? I mean, I read the headlines that say, oh, okay, you know, fancy school X now says that they're going to consider testing again.
My understanding is that some of what these studies showed was that actually by eliminating testing, schools were disadvantaging students who came from like less well-resourced communities. And that the way to use testing in the best possible way is actually to consider scores, I think, within the context of a larger cohort. So if you are performing in the 98th percentile for your particular school or for your particular area, that's something that schools should be looking at. Because if a student is really excelling above and beyond whatever the norm is in their area, in their particular district, in their school, that's a really good indication that they may be able to perform at the level necessary to excel at that college.
What would be a better way? Do you wish that a smaller percentage of people would choose to go to college? Do you wish that there was no essay? Do you wish that instead of an essay, it was a timed questionnaire a student has to do on Zoom so it's checked and it's, oh, okay, the student wrote this? If you had the ability to just remake the process, what would you do?
Well, I think that what we've talked about in terms of this false idea of scarcity is part of what's making the process so toxic. I think on some level, what's necessary to change the admissions process is not even changing that particular system or those requirements, but systemic change across a bunch of different systems. I mean, even industries that have a preference for only hiring students from a small range of schools, if they were to reevaluate those kind of policies, if we were just as a society to maybe shift our veneration of this handful of institutions, I think it could be really valuable because, you know, and maybe we should be thinking about whether it's a place like Harvard or any other school that's incredibly selective as a great place for certain kinds of kids who might be highly driven from a young age and might have figured out that pointy passion really early and had a lot of clarity about it. And that's great. But there should be schools for lots of different kinds of students. And there are, you know, but mm-hmm. if we have this notion that you want to get into the best possible school because that's the only way to make a great life for yourself, I think, as you're saying, that we might be operating with a really outdated model given where we're going to be with careers and AI in a few years and any other number of unforeseen events in the future. I think that if we were to let go of some of that, then we could allow young people to explore more. We could allow young people to take off some of this pressure to have all of this stuff figured out so early. I think what gets to be really toxic and problematic is when all of adolescence becomes a means to an end, when these kids are living their lives with the idea that there is a very particular kind of finish line that they're trying to get to.
Right. Because, yeah, let's all just continue to grow and not feel like we're finished products. I mean, that's that's what life totally. Is really about. So even if you do the Instagram branded thing, which I'm as guilty of as many other people, you're not going to have fun in your life unless you change and adapt, because a million things are going to happen to you and you need to be able to go with the flow. So thank you so much, Sarah. We so appreciate you coming on.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks so much for listening this week. I know this was a bit of a different kind of Infamous episode since we are usually all about pop culture, but this felt like a significant enough issue that we wanted to stop and think about it for a second. I do wonder if my kids, who are 7 and 12, will go to college, or if there are going to be so many changes in this area of American life that it won't be seen as a necessary part of being a professional for most people. Okay, that's it for this week. And next week, we'll be revisiting a story about celebrity and high fashion. It's about Tory Burch and her husband, Chris, a designer couple who fell in love, fell out of love, and waged a war.
New York's nasty $2 billion war of the exes just got nastier.
My parents taught me that negativity is noise.
I actually believe that we'll learn to fly at some point.